everybody, and welcome. This is John Marks, the editor of CopsAlive.com. Cops Alive was founded to help law enforcement professionals find the tools, skills, and resources they need to successfully survive their careers, be happy, healthy, and successful both in their jobs and beyond. And today we have a very interesting guest with us. I have Rick D. Middleton. He is the Chief Operating Officer of Executive Expression Incorporated and also the President of Sage Cadre Publishing. But more important for you, he is the author of a book entitled Don't Look at Me in That Tone of Voice. And Rick came across Cops Alive when he found me on LinkedIn. And there's another example of where we can find lots of resources about out on the Internet in the social media realm with resources like LinkedIn or Twitter or Facebook or MySpace, other than just our typical websites. And I met Rick and was very interested in what he was doing. I have a copy of his book that I've read. I found it absolutely fascinating. And I would like to welcome Rick as our guest today. And Rick, let me just start by asking you to maybe tell the audience how this book came about, because I think it's a great story.
Well, thank you very much, John. I appreciate it. And thanks for the opportunity to speak to your audience today. This book was a work of labor of love, if you will. I gave a presentation to my local Kiwanis Club, and in the audience was a member of the Glendale Police Department's hostage negotiation team. Mm-hmm. When I gave this presentation, there was one little slide in there about a communication bridge where people with accented skills and people with, you know, native English skills try to communicate, and it's like building a bridge from two sides of a chasm. And as you build, you're trying to communicate, you know, what the angles are in the trajectory so that you can communicate where this is going to end up. And if you don't understand what the other person's saying and they don't understand what you're saying, then eventually the work slows down. And the worse that communication gap gets, the harder it is to understand, the slower the work until it absolutely just stops. And now you've got a 200-foot span of empty space, and it's really difficult to communicate free-flowing communication over that gap.
Right.
And that was just one slide, took 60 seconds to present, and this officer came up to me afterwards and says, do you ever do custom presentations? I said, well, sure. I'm in sales and marketing, of course. The answer is yes, every time. And she says, well, I'm with the California Association of Hostage Negotiators, and I'd like to see if you'd put together a presentation for us. Sure. So in research of this presentation and trying to really do a due diligent job, I discovered that I had much more information than could just be put together for a one-hour presentation for this organization. Mm-hmm. And I wanted them to have something to go away with. So this was in July. I was booked to do the presentation at the end of September. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you that I will never do that again, but it was the most focused time of my life. I went from idea to completed book printed in my hands by the 23rd of September, and on the 25th I did my presentation.
That's getting it a little close, but
it's
an impressive piece of work. I commend you for what you've done, and I understand actually now you can use that and have actually traveled around the country doing training for law enforcement teams on the art of visual listening.
Absolutely, and it's actually in its second printing. That first printing sold completely out. I'm on the second printing now with a new design cover and some additional chapters in it. And the art of visual listening, if I can explain what that is.
Please.
We all hear, you know, active listening.
Right.
And active listening, as we all know, is, you know, listen to their words, their tone, their comments, and repeat those back, use similar things to gain their trust. And that's a pretty rudimentary way of communicating with people. And that's such an overused technique, I think, that a lot of people are savvy to it. What the art of visual listening does is, if you think about the words in it, visual and listening, those are the two components that we've added to it. And in my background, I'm not a police officer. I didn't write this book to gain access to the law enforcement world other than to try and help them, help you,
right,
go home safe. My idea is, as a hostage negotiator, you never get to see who you're talking to 90% of the time.
Right.
Am I right?
That's true.
And as such, you are at a disadvantage. And I'd like to when I wrote the book, I positioned it this way in my head before I would sit down and write. I imagined that it's 5 o'clock and I'm driving home, and there are 5 squad cars in front of my house. And inside is someone holding my family. And everything that I write for the next hour determines whether my family gets out alive.
Yeah.
And that will focus you pretty laser-like. So what I've done is I've written a book that takes a police officer from being a recipient of information on the phone to a consumer of information on the phone, if you will. And what I mean by that is listening to how the person you're communicating with uses tone and inflection. You can hear their breathing, whether they're breathing from high in their chest rapidly, whether they're taking slow belly breaths. You can tell whether they're walking. You can hear background noises. You can tell a lot about the room that they're sitting in, which gives you more information about the person you're communicating with. You may not want to relinquish all that information to them because they may be thinking that you have, you know, cameras on them or whatnot. But if you really listen closely, you can hear all of those things.
Right. You know, before you go much further, I know a little bit about your background and what else you do. And I think the audience may benefit from knowing where you came from, where you developed some of these skills, because you've made an outstanding transition from what you've done to the kind of needs that law enforcement have, both face-to-face and, as you mentioned, with a hostage negotiator where you're doing all your work on a telephone, or a detective for that matter. So can you share a little bit about your background and how that kind of evolved into this book? And then let's go through the book a little bit because it's fascinating.
Oh, thank you, John. Absolutely. I own a company called Executive Expression. I'm the marketing and sales end of that as the chief operating officer. I'm also the founder of the company.
Right.
And what we do is we work with accented and foreign-born speakers, non-native English speakers, dialected speakers, and we help them to reduce or modify their accent so that they're much more intelligible. In today's arena, it's not unheard of to have people from multi-language countries coming to the United States to be professionals, to do a job and interface with the public. Well, the first phone call always goes to my desk at our company. So I'm getting them at their raw essence of, if you will, the worst of their communication skills.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that over the years, I really had to learn to listen, because if you've ever spoken to someone with a heavy accent, you catch yourself listening a lot more closely. And when you're in a sales process, it's a dynamic environment, just like a negotiation process. You're trying to subtly steer this conversation in a direction, and if you're having difficulty understanding what the other person is saying, you really need to pay attention to all the other nuances of the communication process so that you can help to steer that in the right direction. And so as a non-police officer, but someone who has a skill set in sales and negotiation, I bring a fresh view of how to communicate to John Q. Public, which I think will be very helpful to the officers and to your audience.
Well, and I would agree with that. Certainly from what I've learned talking to you and have read in the book, you have really expanded on an awful lot of the kind of basic training that we've received about, you know, actively listening and actively engaging in a conversation or a communication. But your concept of visual listening and actually going beyond just the words really opens up the doors for a lot of other great stuff. And that is amazingly useful.
Well, that all came about, very interestingly, as an offshoot of our work as accent consultants. If I can digress for just a minute, which I find fascinating because it's my business, but I think it'll be interesting to your audience. There are two theories, basically, in accent reduction. One is teaching as many new words as I can. Mm-hmm. And considering that there are 500,000 words in the American English Dictionary, that's a pretty big task to do in a set amount of weeks, 14 weeks as we use it. Mm-hmm. However, there are 28 common phonetic sounds across all languages. And there are about 6,000 languages and dialects across the planet. And they all share these 28 sounds, except for some odd click languages in Africa. So what we do is we work on the tone, pitch, rate, intonation, all of those kinds of subtleties in those phonetic sounds. So let's say, for instance, the TH sound is giving someone difficulty. We'd work on that sound. Now, all the words that have a TH sound, like the, belong to that person. I don't have to teach them each word. I teach them the sound.
Oh, that's interesting.
So having learned all the subtleties about pitch, rate, tone, intonation, breathing, all of those kinds of things from my speech pathologists, who, by the way, have a master's degree in communicative disorders, mm-hmm. They've been very helpful in me translating some of that knowledge into real usable layman's terms. That really was the colliding of the two ideas of communication and the art of visual listening. That's what brought it both together.
Hmm. Interesting. And I understand, actually, you've even expanded this now to dispatchers and 911 operators and basically anybody in law enforcement that can or does do business over the telephone.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, North Carolina APCO, which is a dispatch 911 association, we're going to be presenting to them later this year. And we've got several presentation packages out to most of the major conferences for the year. We're definitely looking for doing a lot of that. I just feel like it's a win-win for everybody. I get to go out and talk about a subject that I'm passionate about, and I get to do something good for people that I have the utmost respect for.
Right. Well, how about if we talk a little bit about what's in the book, and maybe you can even give us some insight from some of the law enforcement audiences you've already presented to. What are they finding useful about this?
All right, well, let's talk about what the essence of the book is. And the essence of the book is I'm not a person who likes to write, you know, lengthy diatribes and stories about this, that, and the other. Each chapter begins with a really poignant story. It's one page, kind of sets up the whole chapter.
Okay.
For instance, you may have a chapter that's on listening skills. And so I have a story that sets all that up. And then we just really extensively talk about listening skills from the earliest man right on through to modern man and how it all evolved. So it's a study guide, if nothing else, as well as it's interesting to travel along, because there's a beginning and it flows through. And by the time you get to the end, you can draw your own conclusions. I try not to tell you how to react or how to interpret this information, because everybody's coming from a different communication standpoint, a different level, a different expertise, a different style. So if I tell you this is what I mean by this, that may not be how you interpreted it, and now I've just locked out that audience. So it's more of an accompaniment than a tool that tells you how to think. And I think that's very important, because the professionals that I'm working with are more than capable of drawing their own conclusion to information they're given. And that's really what I wanted to let the book be.
Right.
So one of the things that we talk about in the book is something that I've developed. It's a trademarked thing called the Jenny effect. And that is how we all use a communication style, a perspective to understand any communication we're going to have. And that's the G-G-N-E-E effect, Jenny.
Okay.
And that is, let's say, for instance, you're going to pick up the telephone and say hello. The other person on the phone responds, and the very first thing you decide about that communication event is gender.
Right.
The very next thing you understand is, how old are they? Their generation.
Yep.
Then you're listening for any telltale dialect or nationality inferences, either by words they use. Like in California, we use the word soda, and on the East Coast, they use pop.
Right.
I'm from the East Coast, and I know that.
Yep.
So I would know that if someone was talking to me and they used that word, that they're an East Coast person. The other thing is their educational background. You can tell this a lot of times by the vernacular, the clarity of their communication, whether this is someone who is ill-educated or someone who's highly educated. And your communication style has to adjust to that communication style, not necessarily as in active listening style, but you don't want to be using college-level vernacular or words when you're speaking with someone who has an eighth-grade education. It's just not going to be very well received. The same is true when you're speaking with someone from a foreign country who is a non-native English speaker. The last one is emotion. And you're getting a phone call from your best buddy inviting you out for beers tonight. That's one emotion. You're getting a call from your wife because you forgot to bring home milk last night and she's reminding you not to do it again. That's a different emotion. And the two things that collide are your perspective, your communication partner's perspective, and then the universal common ground is the emotion, because you can all understand that emotion. And one of the stories I like to tell about how you have emotion is a universal common ground is I took a trip about 10 years ago to China. I was the only one, I went with a friend, and he and I were the only two that spoke English. So we're in China for a few days, and no one speaks English there at that time. And as I'm going down this one street, I hear this laughter in the distance. And it's just such a familiar, comforting sound. I knew that I understood what that was, and I understood it. And as I came around the corner, it was a playground full of children, and they were doing exactly what children do everywhere on the world. You know, boys are chasing the girls, they're playing, they're running around, they're laughing and giggling. And that's when I realized that laughing and giggling, like crying and sorrow, are universal emotional sounds. And I incorporated that into this understanding, and that's how I developed the Jenny effect.
And again, that's G-G-N-E-E as an acronym so that you can remember those things. And I thought that part of the book laid an outstanding foundation for all the other things you built on top of that.
Well, thank you very much. And when I'm speaking to police associations and conferences and so on, there are two areas that I continually get positive feedback from that are really important. The first is intercultural, intergenerational communication and intergender communication. Mm-hmm. So the style that I use for my training is not because I don't have a police background and I don't want to come off like I know what I'm talking about, you know, being on the street or being in a negotiation situation where someone's life is in my hands. I talk about it in everyday terms. So when you're talking to your wife and she has this reaction, this is really what she means, and this is how she's trying to communicate that to you. Mm-hmm. And I would say that in today's environment, clearly half of your communication with your spouse is going to be telephonic, because you're on your way to work or on your way home or at work, and your cell phone rings. The world's electronic leash rings, and you're having a communication event with your spouse or significant other. Then what happens is we'll talk about how you relate to your children or to your younger partners or officers, and the difference in generation between those of us that are the baby boomers and those that are the millennials or the X or Y generation, and how their perception of feedback is and so on. And I get a lot of really good feedback from officers on that. Then we talk about, which I think is a really critical event, is a hostage situation where you have someone who's a non-native English speaker. And when do you bring in someone who is a native language speaker to interpret? And when do you not do that? And how do you really communicate? How much more listening do you have to do? What kinds of words and emotions and things are they accustomed to in their language, in their customs, as opposed to in your in American customs? And you have to realize that when you're in an emergency event, whether it's a hostage negotiation or a hostage taker, you're going to revert back to your root culture. Whether it's your father and mother bringing you up or your culture from a foreign country. And when you do that, you're going to resort to or revert back to what's normal in that culture. So in that event, you really want to understand who you're talking to, how they're communicating, why they're communicating that way, so that you can use that to your advantage and not let that catch you in the back.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, I had some training early on in my career on understanding cultural differences. I got a lot of that later in my career because then it became something about political correctness in the workplace, and so there was a lot of training. But early on, there were some basic training courses on just appreciating and understanding the cultural differences that you might encounter when contacting people in the community, whether they be suspects or witnesses or what have you. And I always found that fascinating, but we as a group never got that much training in that area. And I think your program may be very helpful in that respect alone, much less learning to decipher some of the things in a crisis situation.
Well, thank you. And there again, it's that perfect storm of owning and operating Executive Expression, which was an accent reduction company,
right.
Having a knowledge of sales and marketing and negotiations, spending a lot of time on the telephone, and someone out of the blue asking me a simple question that brought all of that together at the perfect moment.
Right. Do you want to briefly touch on what it is that you, what kind of training you provide, and you know what that entails, how long it is, and how you make that available?
Absolutely, John. Thank you. Well, there's a couple of ways that we can do this. The training I provide can be as little as 90 minutes, mm-hmm. and as much as two sessions over two 90-minute periods. And that session really is the full brunt of getting the full understanding of how this works. But one of the things that I'm a big proponent of, or two things, are, one, interactivity is key when you're doing training. So you have to get the audience involved. And secondly, if you're not smiling at least, then you're not really learning because you're not letting anything in. And so what I do is I have some actual hands-on exercises that we'll attempt during the class period or during the training that will call members out of the audience. And they're so in-your-face obvious to the audience members, but before you actually attempted it, you have no clue and never realize that, oh, that is an innate part of human experience. And so I think those hands-on exercises are just vital to getting the message across. Am I able to translate everything out of my 157-page book in an hour and a half? No. That's the reason for the book. Is my audience expected to remember every word I say? Absolutely. Do they? No. But that's why we have the book. And so I think it's a good accompaniment because you can take this, read it, reread it. I've actually got training officers who have bought the book and handed it down not only to one new recruit but to another. And so they've got two new members on their negotiation team, both of which have been required to read the book. And I think that's just a great testament to the book and to the project.
I would agree. And as somebody who just had the opportunity to read the book without sitting in on some of the hands-on training, I have to say that I left reading the book going, oh, you know, I really want to be there and participate in some of the hands-on stuff, because you can read it, but it doesn't translate as well as when you have somebody doing the role playing or, you know, working through some of this stuff. And it's very similar to a lot of the training we've done in hostage negotiations. But I think it would benefit patrol officers and particularly detectives, because some of this is what a detective would be looking to decipher when they're interviewing people over the phone.
Yeah, I agree. There are some surprising things, even for me, who I crafted those exercises. I developed those, and I got results that I wasn't expecting the first few times that I did them.
I'll bet you get different stuff every time.
There's an emotional exercise we do where we have apathy and anger as part of four emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that was trying to understand who had what emotions understood apathy and anger to be exactly the same.
Yeah. And that could cause a little bit of a problem if you're confusing them.
It can. If you're not really paying attention to the subtleties of how someone's saying something, mm-hmm. it's very easy to understand anger and apathy as being the same. And when you think about those communication styles and you just sit down for a moment and reflect on it, you'll see that it's an obvious error, but until it's presented to you, you don't really get that. And right. so I think that's really the value that I bring to a lot of these conferences, and the book brings as a handout, as a takeaway.
Well, and I would say the 90-minute time slot would certainly be outstanding for both a law enforcement conference or association meeting, but also for some in-service training. And I don't know whether you've tapped that market or not, but I would think this is great, you know, kind of advanced in-service training for any law enforcement officer. And I would think this would squeeze easily into some of those kind of time slots. So if you haven't thought about that, I would encourage you to do that.
Oh, absolutely. We're definitely trying to expand our market and to see where this market goes. It's interesting that marketing to law enforcement is unlike any other marketing I've ever done. You start out at arm's length or farther,
right.
and you have to earn your way closer. But what I've discovered is that this is a warm organization, and once you're inside the arm's length and you've shaken hands, until you've done something wrong or irrevocable, you're in. And I really appreciate that. They take you at face value, and they make you earn your way in. But once you're in, you're in.
Yeah.
And that's always a good thing.
I agree. And you know, I think even as you've explained here, you have some really good skills that have come from another profession, so to speak, and they translate really easily. And, you know, I'll commend you for making that transition. And obviously that first person that you encountered that planted that seed, you know, good job, because you can spend an entire career in law enforcement and you will encounter new things every day. And I know the training officers are always searching for something new to give the troops, because you need to keep learning throughout your profession. And yet sometimes we fall back on the same old things and we get very repetitive in our training. And you know, I'm holding the book and just looking through here. You've got some stuff on nonverbal communications, some stuff that goes a little further into what I think you were talking about as far as visually listening. You use the term decode, decipher, deduce. those are things that we don't get very often, and I think sometimes it needs a fresh perspective to bring that in from outside. So good for you. As I'm looking through the book, I'm wondering if there's anything else that you want to talk about that's in the book, because we still have some time left.
Let's try a little experiment with your audience. What do you say?
Sounds good.
There's a section in the book where we try and explain the power of visual listening. And what I do is I tell everybody, we all have had events in our lives that are indelible. And as soon as you say a word or a phrase, you can instantly recall a picture. And what's interesting is that picture is universal. So for those of us that are baby boomers, if I say JFK, everybody has a picture. They know exactly where they were. They see exactly the same picture, and the picture is 99.9% of the time of the Lincoln going through the plaza with Jackie hanging off the back of the trunk.
Yeah.
And it sounds like a party trick, and a lot of magicians do those kinds of things because pictures and events and times are so universal to us. If you think back, the oldest known communication for humanity are cave drawings, because pictographs are the easiest way to communicate something to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's really an interesting way to start, and that's what the book does. It starts at that paleological point of time where man is developing and follows through how we develop. And in order to understand that really in a condensed mode, just look at an infant. From birth to three, they go from total dependence on you for everything to verbal independence.
Yeah.
And that's just an amazing transformation that took thousands and 10,000 years for man to do. What I'd like to do is, if I can talk about some of the presentations that are being proposed and some of the current market environments just for a second.
Sure. Go ahead.
There are a lot of conferences that I'm proposing to, and there are a lot of constraints now with municipalities and with being able to afford to send officers to those and so on. And, you know, I'm not in this project for the travel. I've been there and done that. I'm in this to earn a living, quite frankly, but also to make sure that this information gets into the hands of those that need it the most and can use it. So what I've done is when I propose to a lot of these conferences, there's a lot of training going on, and I'm just one of many training opportunities, and you may not get a chance to see or hear me.
Right.
So what I've presented is, look, the coordinators of the conference buy my book for everybody that buys a ticket to the conference. Give it to them. If they don't get an opportunity to come and see me, at least they've got the book as a takeaway. Because let's face it, John, how many more briefcases, T-shirts, or pens can you possibly take home from the next conference?
Uh-huh. I agree.
So a book is something that has intrinsic value and it lasts a lifetime.
Yep. Good idea. And how's that going over?
I'm getting very good reviews on that. I've gotten quite a few conferences that are actually opening up to that because they have X number of members and they know that it's going to be tough to fill those ranks. And I'm finding that in not just law enforcement conferences, but across the board. So you guys are not isolated. It's an issue for all of the conference world, but it's being received really well because they can take funds they've already identified for conference giveaways or promos and really make it something useful for you to take away. You know, wearing a T-shirt around that says, I went to this conference is nice, but it doesn't really advance your career any. And that's really why you're going to that conference.
Exactly. I'm kind of curious, in your travels and your work with law enforcement officers, presenting the same kind of information you probably use in to other audiences, what have you learned from these audiences as kind of your takeaway and kind of an aha to say, you know, when you go back to the other realm of non-law enforcement professionals, have you learned anything from cops? Have they provided you with any insight on how to use some of this material?
Well, you know, as good a listener as I think I am and as I want to be, I have to tell you a cute story about the very first time I beta tested this presentation to a hostage team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing my presentation, and they knew that this was brand new. This was the first version I was giving. And I told them that we would stop periodically to kind of vet out some of the training issues that I was coming across. So I'm standing up there, and I'm telling them how to listen to the person breathe, and you can tell when they're nervous and, you know, that they're breathing from their upper chest, and it's really a tight voice sound like that, you know, and that you really want to calm them down. You want to take control of the situation. So I said, have them breathe from their belly. You can tell if they're seated or standing.
Mm-hmm.
So have them stand up and just take some relaxing breaths from their belly and try and calm them down so that you can, you know, communicate more clearly with them. And there was a few snickers and some pointing, and I went, okay, whoa. Let's stop the presentation. Let's vet this out and find out what did I just do. And what they told me was, well, it's a pretty common joke, you know, yeah, get some fresh air in the room, stand over, go to the window, let our sniper shoot you. And at that moment,
right.
I went, oh. And I had to learn to think in a different modality for police officers, more of a safety issue,
mm-hmm.
more of a don't think of the obvious answer, but think universally. How is this going to play out like a chessboard? And although I do that when I'm in a sales mode with a client, I instinctually do that because I've been doing it so long. And so I had to really start to think, what is it that I do instinctually and how should I be doing that when I'm talking with negotiation officers? Because there's an element there where if I say something wrong to a client, they say, no, I'm not going to buy your product. If you say something wrong to one of your situations, somebody could get killed. And that's a lot more serious. And so I really need to focus and pay attention to how I communicate things. And I still make blunders, but it's all part of my learning experience. what I've heard from officers about my presentation is they appreciate that I incorporate this into their everyday lives. They learn things about how to communicate with their significant others, how to communicate with younger generations, how to communicate with customer service professionals. And by doing that, they incorporate those things into their daily life. And what they've found is that when they get on scene, those things just kick in automatically because they've been practicing the techniques that I've taught them, because they're life skills that translate into being a negotiator, as opposed to negotiation skills to transfer into being a life skill.
I understand. Interesting. Do you get that kind of that perspective from other audiences? I guess they just don't even consider communications to be that critical, and yet in financial realms, it may not be life-threatening, but it certainly could, you know, a miscommunication could lead to some major financial devastation. So I guess I'm surprised that that other people don't consider communication to be so important, but I appreciate your perspective on that.
Well, an interesting comment to that. One of my first clients for executive expression was a young MBA from USC, mm-hmm. and he was from China, mm-hmm. but his English was good enough to get him through the MBA program. And he went to work for a major Fortune 100 consulting firm. And his job was to negotiate $100 million contracts across the country. Mm-hmm. And his boss calls me and says, I need you to work with this guy because this is the problem. And I said, he says, he's on the telephone talking with the CEO of a corporation in New York, and he has an action list that this CEO is giving him. And he'll say, cool beans, I'm on it. Now, cool beans is great if you're having a beer with your buddies.
Yeah.
But when you're negotiating on a $100 million contract, that just usurps your value to that process tenfold. And it's the same as using the word dude. That should never come out of anybody's mouth on the telephone unless you're talking to your best friend. And you hear it all the time. And you hear this with the other generations within your organizations as well. And so it is a value proposition for other groups, but they just don't recognize it until it's so fatal that it may have caused them some harm financially to their organization. Police officers and hostage negotiators don't have that luxury. You can't wait till something goes wrong to fix it.
Yeah. Interesting stuff and very heady stuff. And it amazes me that we actually don't spend more time talking about communication skills, because it is the very essence of what we do in law enforcement on a day-to-day basis, whether it is face-to-face with someone or over the telephone. And because that telephone adds that extra bit of obstruction to our full communication, I think your technique certainly can help peel some of that away. And so I commend you for that. Do you have any tidbits from the book that you want to share with us? Any tips or suggestions that somebody can put in their pocket right now and use tomorrow or today?
I think the best thing that I can offer is not necessarily for them, you know, to use in the field today, mm-hmm. but this is the one tip I've given at every presentation, and it's the number one thing that I get the most feedback on that was of the most help. I have three daughters and a wife, so I officially live in a testosterone-free zone. And as such, my oldest daughter is 30, and my twin girls just turned 13 last week. So I'm caught between two freight trains here. And from my oldest daughter, I've learned a great deal. And the story I tell is that she came into my office when she was a teenager, and she was leaning on the door. And my girls know that when I'm in my office, I'm at work, and I'm really not to be bothered. And so they usually don't bother me. But she had this pensive look, and I asked her what was wrong, and she goes, nothing. I said, okay, well, do you want to talk about anything? No. No, okay, but is it something I can help you with? It's Roger. Oh. You want a bowl of ice cream? And she looked at me, and she smiled, and she goes, no, Daddy, but thank you for asking. Yeah. what that story really means is when a woman comes to you and she has a problem, she may want to tell you all about it. That does not mean she wants you to solve it for her. That does not mean she wants any advice, she wants any direction. The phrase, "I just want to talk it through," I firmly believe was coined by a woman because that's really what they want to do. They just want to vet it, work through it in their own mind. They're not looking for you to give them any solutions, any propositions, any answers. So when your significant other comes to you and says, "Hey, I really need to talk about this," that means engage your ears and disengage your mouth. Just sit there and, yeah. But actively listen so that when they come back and ask you questions later, you can actually tell them what they said. But they're not looking for you to contribute solutions. They're just asking for you to contribute your ears so that they can vet and talk through this situation. And that universally has been the one thing that I've gotten feedback that, wow, that was worth the price of the book.
Well, it certainly works for me because I am so guilty of that, and I think anybody with a law enforcement mind, the minute somebody starts talking about a problem, you just want to kick in and roll up the sleeves and get it solved. And I have had to rein myself in so many times in that very same circumstance just because it's not a time for that. And yet we click into action mode almost automatically. And I think as law enforcement professionals, it doesn't matter where we work in the field, you know, that power of listening is something that we need to be reminded about all the time.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that it is one of those skills that is, it's not taught in school. You have to kind of learn it on your own. You learn from your parents. And it's an inherent thing where if they're not good listeners, they're not good communicators, likelihood is, you know, you're not going to be. And you have to either take the initiative to learn on your own through presentations such as mine, or you really have to take a personal initiative to just work on that every single day. And that's what I hope to bring to presentations that I do and to folks that read the book. By the way, the book is available on our website at visual-listening.com. Visual-listening.com. Or if somebody has a comment, they want to call me, my number is 818-541-0081. And my email address is Rick, R-I-K, at visual-listening.com. And I'd love any feedback, and even more, I would love orders for the book.
Well, and let me remind everybody, the title of the book is Don't Look at Me in That Tone of Voice, by Rick, R-I-K, middle initial D, Middleton, M-I-D-D-L-E-T-O-N. And I've read it. I found it fascinating. It leaves you wanting more. And even doing some of the exercises, you know, you want to do them in kind of a group setting. So I actually think this would be better done in a group training than trying to learn it on your own. But that's just my opinion. Rick, I want to thank you for being our guest. I hope that you'll have much success traveling around the United States and around the world, passing on the information that you have developed to law enforcement agencies and officers around the world. I found it valuable, and I always appreciate it when somebody in the business community takes law enforcement seriously and recognizes a need and brings some skills and techniques to bear that we can learn from and we can use, and I always find that to be refreshing. So I commend you for doing what you've done, and I commend you for writing the book. I thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, John. I appreciate the opportunity to present to your listeners, and thank you for responding on LinkedIn.
Not a problem. We try to be responsive, too, and, you know, I think there's a great big law enforcement community out there, and I really believe that the answers to all of our questions are out there somewhere. And thanks to the Internet and all the tools that are available online, we really have a greater opportunity now at this time to be able to reach out and help each other. And that's certainly what Cops Alive is all about. It is cops helping other cops. Our motto is helping save the lives of those who save lives. And we really are all about somebody going through a law enforcement career successfully so that they can stay happy, healthy, and be very, very good at what they do, both in their personal lives and on the job, and come out on the other end a much better person, as opposed to some that the career just thrashes them apart, and some of us don't make it through successfully, and that's what we're trying to avoid. So, Rick, I appreciate it. These tools are helpful both in our personal lives and our professional lives, and that's very powerful stuff. So thank you for being our guest, and I expect that we will come across you many other times.
Well, thank you. I look forward to meeting all of your listeners, and if you've heard this program, if you see me at a conference, please come up and mention it, and I will get the word back to John.
Thanks, Rick. This is John Marks. I'm the editor of Cops Alive. You can find us at www.copsalive.com. And again, our guest today was Rick D. Middleton. He is the author of Don't Look at Me in That Tone of Voice, and you can find Rick at www.visual-listening.com. Thanks, and stay safe out there. Take care.